Welcome to the 328th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a look at week 13 of college football, and week 12 of NFL football action, our weekly look at the NBA, and a recap of the past week in college basketball. Let's jump right in with a look at Patrick's weekend predictions, starting in college football, where Patrick went 3-1. Moving to the NFL, Patrick also went 3-1. In the NBA, Patrick went 1-3, and in NCAA basketball, Patrick went 3-1. So that means Patrick went 10-6 with his weekend predictions, bringing him to a 1,395-875 overall record, a 61.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I think it's pretty interesting that since I've moved to the 16 games with both college basketball and the NBA back, every week has been 10-6 in a different variation each time in terms of what league is 3-1 and what's 2-2 and whatnot. This was the first time I had a 1-3 week mixed in. But, you know, it'd be nice to get a 4-0 week somewhere and go 11-5, or maybe a 2-2 in the NBA when I have all other 3-1s and go 11-5. But for now, I am pretty happy with these predictions. Going back to college football, there were a few close ones, a few not close ones. Oklahoma and Oregon, namely, being the not close ones that were kind of easy predictions, but the only ranked games of the week, so I had to pick them. Got those two right. They both won. BYU was only favored by 2.5 against Cincinnati on the road. So close game against that would have been ranked had Cincinnati not lost last weekend. But BYU won 26-14. I got that right. And then the one I got wrong this week was that Georgia Tech lost to Pitt 42-28 at home, which was just shocking. I thought about picking Pitt, but I would have only done that if they were playing at home. If they were playing at home, I probably would have picked them, but didn't expect them to go on the road and beat Georgia Tech. So great gameplay by Pitt. They have dominated the ACC this season. Obviously, the big loss last week against Notre Dame, but only one ACC loss on the season, which sets up a pretty interesting final week that we'll talk about later. Then in the NFL, the Rams easily beat the Buccaneers. The Bears did what they always do, which is barely win, but they did win against the Steelers, 31-28. The Chiefs came back from 14 down in the fourth quarter, or 11 down, I think, to beat the Colts 23-20 in overtime. And then the Cowboys, the only game I got wrong this week, they came back from 21 down to beat the Eagles 24-21 on a game-winning Brandon Aubrey field goal. So I got one overtime comeback that went my way. I got a different fourth quarter comeback that went the other way. Overall, 3-1, not too bad. In the NBA, had some interesting predictions here. The Spurs and the Hawks, two great teams, but both of them missing their stars. No Trae Young, no Victor Wembanyama in this game. I thought that the Spurs without Wemby would be worse than the Hawks without Trae Young, because the Hawks are actually 9-3, I think, the season without Trae Young, or something like that. They've been pretty good is the point. But the Spurs won that matchup, so I got that wrong. The Suns beat the Timberwolves 114-113. This loss I'm mad about because the Timberwolves were up 113-107 with 44 seconds left and lost this game. I don't know how you give up a 7-0 run at the end of the game. It just, you can't do that. So that one I'm a little salty about because they literally just shouldn't have lost the game. And then the Nuggets beat the Rockets 112-109. Really close one, really fun game, but I picked that one wrong. Then finally the one I got right, the Magic beat the Knicks 133-121 over the weekend. And then in college basketball, you had the start of Feast Week action. Number 6 Louisville went on the road, beat Cincinnati 74-64. I guess technically not on the road because it wasn't at Cincinnati's gym, but it was a game in Cincinnati, so that's on the road. Number 9 BYU beat number 23 Wisconsin 98-70. Also technically not a home game, but it wasn't Salt Lake City, so that's also pretty much a home game. I got that one right. And then number 15 Texas Tech beat Wake Forest 84-83 in the Baja Mar Championships. That one definitely a neutral site. And then Kansas State beat Mississippi State 98-77. That was the only game I got wrong. Kansas State actually playing in Kansas City, so that one also maybe kind of more like a home game, but overall pretty satisfied with how the week went in terms of predictions.
All right. Well, Patrick's weekend predictions for next weekend's game will be posted, as always, on our social media channels at the handle 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on Thursdays. Now let's turn our attention to a look back at last week's action in football, starting with week 13 in college football action.
TCU went on the road and beat number 23 Houston 17-14. Houston, one of the teams that had to kind of jump into the bottom of the poll. It's really interesting seeing the playoff committee kind of backfill the rest of this poll, because it's been it's been odd. Every single team at the bottom of the poll has kind of lost every single week, and it's really hard to just keep kind of rotating teams in and out. You're going to have to reuse teams eventually. But they put Houston in there this week, and Houston immediately lost, just like they did the last time they were ranked when they lost to West Virginia. That one a more surprising loss. This one, TCU is a pretty good team, actually ended up ranked in the AP poll at the end of this week. So they're a good team. But they jumped out to a 14-0 lead, and that really ruined things for Houston. Speaking of ruining things for Houston, they have no chance at making the Big 12 championship game now after that loss. Obviously, that's their third in conference. The top two in the conference both have one, and there are two other teams that only have two. So pretty much no chance for Houston. I think there's a chance they're mathematically eliminated. I just haven't done the math on that. But Houston would be in the conversation if they only had two losses, but unfortunately, that is not the case anymore. Speaking of two teams that have nothing to do with their conference championship, Wisconsin beat number 21 Illinois 27-10. This isn't shocking. Illinois has kind of been up and down this season. Every week, they look really good. They don't really follow it up with a great win the next week, and that has kind of been the trend. They're going to end probably 8-4. And 5-4 in the Big Ten, if they can take care of Northwestern. But there's also a chance that, you know, they come out flat against Northwestern, because Northwestern is a much better team than Wisconsin. So they could both end up 7-5 at the end of that game. It wouldn't shock me, but that would be a really disappointing season for Illinois if they ended up 7-5 after the after their start to the year. I mean, based on their schedule, obviously two pretty hard games in there that they were supposed to lose, but you think Washington could have been a winnable game as well. And then this game definitely fits into the description of winnable, just a crazy upset. In this one, then you have Pitt, who beat Georgia Tech 42-28. Of course, Georgia Tech ranked 16th, Pitt unranked heading into this weekend. But that one was a huge difference maker in the ACC race. There are now six teams that are in contention. Duke, Miami, and Georgia Tech now all have two losses, while Virginia, Pitt, and SMU have one loss. The reason why, obviously, that was a big deal is because Pitt comes into the weekend and they play Miami at home. So Pitt beats Miami. Think they're in the championship game. Virginia, on the other hand, they have a game against Virginia Tech coming up. Tough rivalry there. And then SMU, the last team in that mix that's that has one loss, is at Cal. So some interesting matchups. Cal will not have a head coach for that game, which is obviously a complicating factor. And then obviously Georgia Tech and Duke all need losses. They need help from those other teams to actually have a chance at making the conference championship game. Meanwhile, Miami doesn't, I don't think they control their own destiny, but they can do a lot to help themselves. If they can beat Pitt, then they just need one loss out of Virginia and SMU, and then they would be in, I believe. So really interesting stuff going on in the ACC there, and Pitt obviously is the one that really threw a wrench into things, because Georgia Tech has finished all of their conference games, so we know they'll be at 6-2 and don't have the tiebreaker over Pitt because of that loss last weekend, as opposed to if they had won it already, be kind of obvious who would be making this conference championship. It would just be a matter of tiebreakers between those three, because Georgia Tech obviously plays Georgia this week, not a conference opponent. But then, speaking of that Big 12 title race, you had another scare potentially in there. Number 12, Utah, had to survive Kansas State 51-47 at home. Maybe they'll get a bump down from the committee after this one, because Kansas State has not had a good season. And allowing 47 points to that team is just not a good sign of how good your team is. But Utah, in the end, they stay with two losses. They stay in the race, as I talked about before. Also in the race, number 11, BYU. They are the top dog in the race, actually, other than Texas Tech. They are tied atop the conference, 7-1 each in conference. BYU beat Cincinnati this week, as we mentioned in predictions. Cincinnati headed into that matchup with two conference losses, and BYU had one. So had Cincinnati won that game, could have been chaos, because if Cincinnati had won, they'd be 6-2, Utah would be 6-2, Arizona State would be 6-2, and also BYU would be 6-2. Trailing the 7-1 Texas Tech Red Raiders. So it would have been a four-way tie for second place heading into the last game of the season. But of course, that's not the case. BYU took care of business. And that means that, you know, I won't call it an uninteresting last week, but I'm thinking that these teams know exactly what they need to do. BYU just needs to go out and beat UCF, who is 2-6 in conference. Texas Tech just needs to go out and beat West Virginia, who is 2-6 in conference. And those teams will then rematch in the Big 12 championship game, which would be a pretty good title game, I would think. But I guess, you know, depends on if you view Texas Tech as truly head and shoulders above the rest of this conference, which, frankly, I kind of do. So maybe it won't be a great game. But if you want to talk about a team that is head and shoulders above their competition, Notre Dame beat Syracuse 70-7. Syracuse, backup quarterback in this game, not a great team to start with. But a 3-8 season, just kind of a wasted year for Fran Brown, given injuries. The real reason I wanted to talk about this game is because Notre Dame was up 35-0 after the end of the first quarter. They actually let their foot off the gas to end up with 70 points. They probably could have had 100 if they felt like it. They also were up 21-0 without snapping the ball on offense in this game. So that was another thing that was interesting to discuss. And, of course, Jeremiah Love took a third of his carries in this game for touchdowns. 9 carries for, I think, 180-some-odd yards and then 3 touchdowns. So thorough beatdown by Notre Dame. Continuing to show that, look, you can only play who's in front of you. And they're doing a good job of beating up on who's in front of them, because there aren't many other teams that have been just flat-out demolishing every single opponent. And they've also gotten some help from some of their past opponents, too, that we'll talk about in a second. But number 8, Oklahoma, beat number 22, Missouri, 17-6. Oklahoma doing their thing, staying in the playoff conversation. Very interesting season that the Sooners have had, obviously. The playoff committee has talked about the fact that John Mateer's injury is a factor for them, and that bodes well for them because they need the help to get into the playoffs, even though I think they're pretty easily going to end up 10-2 because LSU isn't very good themselves. So a home game against LSU should be an easy way to close out the year. Obviously, the big game that swung, or the big three games that swung their schedule, well, they had 5, it looked like, heading into the end of the season, with Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, and LSU all ranked at the time. Obviously, all of those teams have gone in very different directions since then. But they did lose that game to Ole Miss at home, and, you know, that's probably the most dead their season felt. But then, bouncing back, getting 2 road wins at Tennessee, at Alabama, I think no one really thought they were going to win both of those games, and they did, which means that now you play an overrated Missouri team and a 7-win LSU team that doesn't have a head coach at home, and neither of those two games should pose any challenge, which means that at 10-2 in the SEC, with even a non-conference win against a 9-3 at worst Big Ten team in Michigan, and you have a playoff team here. So Oklahoma just needs to take care of business this weekend, beat LSU, and they will be in the college football playoff for the first time since Lincoln Riley left. And speaking of Lincoln Riley, he brought his USC team to Oregon, and unfortunately for him, they still don't play enough defense to beat premier teams. Oregon just a little bit better than USC is. USC was in the conference championship conversation heading into the week, but this one pretty much took them out of it. They are now 7-1 in the Big Ten. I actually think they are completely out of it, because someone has to win between Michigan and Ohio State, and whoever wins ends up with 1 loss, and then, of course, Indiana, even at worst, would have 1 loss. So USC is mathematically eliminated, but Oregon is not from the conference championship game just yet. They are still alive at 7-1, and regardless, they will be in the playoff. There's just no way that even a loss to Washington would knock them out, at least in my opinion. At 10-2, they're already at number 7. I just don't see how they would miss the playoff with that record. But of course, speaking of the Big Ten, I'm going to end it by just saying there is still a world where you have Michigan in the title game in the Big Ten. All they have to do is beat Ohio State, which is a tall order and a tough task. But I think for the Big Ten's whole conference outlook, technically, if you were a neutral Big Ten observer, which is not really a thing, but if you were, you would want Michigan to win that game because it would put the most teams in the playoff. It would give the Big Ten 4 playoff teams to counter the, 10 that the SEC are going to get. I know that's not mathematically possible, but it feels like every single team they have is ranked in the top 15. But obviously that Michigan game will be a big deal, because you would think that a Michigan team that ends up 10-2 and maybe in the conference championship game would end up with a playoff berth. But it's a really interesting discussion what can happen if they then lose that game, whatever. There's a lot of different variables there, but the main point is you'd think that if Michigan gets the best win that there is to get on the season, they probably end up in the playoff. Although it's interesting because Michigan also has to worry about a team like Texas, who plays Texas A&M in the same situation. and has a common opponent win that Michigan does not have. So there's a lot of interesting playoff narratives heading into the last weekend. But of course, the biggest thing is just go win your games, and you'll probably everything else will probably take care of itself, is kind of the motto when you look around the whole college football landscape. Mathematically, there just aren't enough teams to fill all of these spots if you're going to lose the game. So just win the games and you'll make it in.
Yeah, there are a lot of what-if scenarios heading into the final week of college football's regular season. We will talk about that on next week's podcast. Let's continue our look back at last week's football action with a look at Week 12 in the NFL.
Yeah, Week 12 in the NFL was kind of an odd one. A lot of expected blowouts that happened. Maybe the only not expected blowout was the Rams just destroying the Buccaneers. Obviously, big wrinkle in that was Baker Mayfield getting injured at the end of the first half. But the Rams were already up 31-7 at the half. In fact, the second half was pretty uneventful. Only 3 points combined between both the teams. But the Rams easily getting that win, continuing to march towards the one seed in the NFC. And I'll talk about why that got helped and why they're now actually in that spot in a second. But the Texans on Thursday Night Football, maybe they keep listening to this podcast. They finally beat a really, really good team. The Bills haven't looked great over the last few weeks, but the Texans took advantage of that. Josh Allen looked horrible in this game, and the Texans' defense just completely stepped up as it has all year long. They won this game 23-19, even with Davis Mills starting at quarterback. So you got to wonder what could happen if C.J. Stroud can come back from his concussion and play maybe more like his last year self, then all of a sudden you really do have a good team down in Houston. So we will just have to see what happened with that. But Houston, still not in the lead in their division, of course, because of multiple teams. But one of them are the Jaguars, who went to overtime but did end up beating the Arizona Cardinals to move to 7-4 on the week, or on the year, excuse me. Closer than it should have been, definitely, but they still won the game, so the Jaguars should be happy. Then you have the Colts, who, of course, lost to the Chiefs, also in overtime. There were three overtime games this week. But the Colts, still 8-3, still out ahead in that division. I still trust them to beat those other teams for that division lead. But it is narrowing, and of course, for the Chiefs, that was a really important game because if they had fallen to 5-6, they're really, really in a tough place when it comes to playoff contention. You need to be a few games over 500, and they would need to basically rattle off wins and probably go undefeated for the rest of the season to make it in the AFC. But now that they're 6-5, maybe they have a one- or two-game cushion. And they're also claiming the tiebreaker over the Colts should anything happen on their season is also pretty important because they don't have the tiebreaker over a lot of teams in the AFC, as we talked about previously. Then you have the Lions, who narrowly escaped the Jameis Winston experience and ended up coming back, forcing overtime and winning the game 34-27 in overtime. Still on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoff picture at 7-4. Just on the outside, as I said, though, at the 8 spot currently with the 49ers at 8-4 holding that last spot. And the Packers at 7-3-1 in that 6 spot. Funny enough, that tie is actually helping the Packers, which is not something that was supposed to happen, but it is. Speaking of that division, though, the Bears are the team currently leading it at 8-3. That's where the tie doesn't help the Packers because, of course, if the Packers were 8-3, they would also be atop this division. But they are not, which leaves them right in between the 8-3 Bears and 7-4 Lions in that wildcard spot. But the Bears winning another close one. And then finally, the reason that the Rams did end the week, with the number one seed is because the Eagles lost to the Cowboys. We talked about it earlier. Eagles up 21-0 in the second quarter in this game. And, you know, I've seen a lot of complaints that basically the Eagles just tried to run the clock out in a game that they were winning by 21 in the second quarter. And it really does feel like that. They have a very vanilla offense, and they went even more vanilla and started running even more towards the end of that game. And not even towards the end, towards the middle of that game. Which is just not what you're supposed to be doing, especially when you know how bad this Cowboys defense is. You just got to keep scoring on this team. I don't think they can stop you if you're running real plays and really trying to go after a win. And they didn't in the first or second quarter, so I don't really see how you don't just keep your foot on the gas, keep doing what's working in the rest of the game. The Eagles definitely have not looked like their championship selves this year.
Okay, that wraps up our look back at the NFL and the look back at football for the week. Let's turn our attention to basketball. And we will start in the NBA, where we will start, as always, in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it looks like the play-in standings from a few years ago have moved their way to the top of the standings, and it's true. The Detroit Pistons, sitting at 15-2, best record in the NBA, only trailing the, well, second best record, only trailing the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is a really, really good place to be in. If you have followed the NBA, that is a pretty Captain Obvious-like statement. But the Pistons have won 13 games in a row after starting 2-2. And meanwhile, another team that started 500, the Raptors, started 5-5, and they have won 8 games in a row. So all of a sudden, maybe the Raptors aren't a fluke. Maybe this is a real, real team that they built. They are looking like a formidable team in the East. And, you know, a lot of this is because of the injuries that have kind of ruined a lot of teams. In the East, you have the Pacers sitting all the way in second to last, and the Celtics in the play-in because of the Tatum and Halliburton injuries. And then, you know, Giannis doesn't really have much help, so the Bucks are on the outside looking in. So, really, three of the big kind of five or six teams in the East for the last few years, they just don't have what it takes to really compete at the top of the standings, and that's why you're seeing a wide-open East and a few teams taking advantage, which includes the Pistons and the Raptors. It also includes the Miami Heat, who have won 5 in a row. They are now 12-6 on the season, having a pretty solid run at it. The Cleveland Cavaliers are at 12-7. They're kind of the steady team. They haven't been as dominant as they were last year or really the year before that either. And I think they definitely lost some depth in the offseason. That certainly hurt their case. And maybe that is going to continue for the rest of the year. Maybe not quite the top-of-the-line team that we thought they would be heading into the season. Maybe just sitting kind of back in this third or fourth spot as they were a few years ago before the real dominant year last year. Then you have the Knicks at 10-6. Kind of the same story as the Cavs, although they didn't lose any depth. They just kind of have not played as well to start the year. They've had a Brunson injury. They've had an OG Anunoby injury. You assume once they get healthy, they kind of shoot back up the top of the standings a little bit. After all, they're only 2 games behind the Raptors for the second seed, so nothing really to worry about there. 7-3 in their last 10, so they're playing good basketball. Also 7-3 in their last 10 are the Atlanta Hawks. Even without Trae Young playing for most of those games, they are 11-7. The sixth seed currently, you have the Sixers, who are currently in the play-in at 9-7. They are 1 game back of the Hawks and tied with the Orlando Magic for that 7-8 seed position. They are also 5.5 back at 10-8. Then you have the Bulls and the Celtics, who are both 6 back of the lead and 1.5 back of the Hawks, just a half game behind the Magic and the Sixers with that 9-8 record. The Bucks, who are 8-10, as I've talked about, they have lost 5 games in a row. After a solid 8-5 start to the season, they've kind of just fallen off a cliff since then. You have the Hornets at 4-13 at the bottom of the standings here, joined by the Nets, who are 3-14, the Pacers, who I talked about, who are 2-15. And the Wizards, who have lost 14 in a row to get to 1-15. Someone should tell the Wizards that there's really a big 3 or 4, or maybe even a big 5 of prospects this year. They don't have to lose 70 games to get a great player. I mean, they're going to end up with one of Peterson, DePensa, or Boozer, no matter if they're 1-15 or 3-14. Maybe someone should let them know that they could win maybe a few games would be kind of nice. But right now, just completely stuck in the mud are the Wizards. Then in the West, you have the Thunder, who are 17-1, of course, just dominant. They're going to do this all year long. But currently, they've won 9 in a row. That means they'll probably lose maybe a game this week and then keep rolling and get to like 20-2 by the time we do the next podcast. But then you have the Nuggets. They are 13-4, 8-2 in their last 10. The Lakers are 12-4. They are 8-2 in their last 10. They have won 4 in a row, including the first 2 games with LeBron back this season. So LeBron is back and healthy playing for the Lakers. Then you have the Rockets, who are 11-4, 8-2 in their last 10 as well. We talked about the loss to the Nuggets over the weekend, but I think those four have pretty solidly established themselves as kind of the big four in the West based on how things have started the season. You also have the Spurs at 11-5, keeping things afloat without Victor Wembanyama. We'll see how well it can do in terms of staying up there and how long they can do that. Then you have the Suns at 11-7, six games back of the Thunder in the lead and 1 back of the Spurs for that 5 seed, and a half a game ahead of the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, of course, they beat over the weekend. 10-7 are the Timberwolves. The Suns, Going back to them for a second, just a really impressive season considering that really no one really expected much out of this roster, but they played pretty well, especially recently, 8-2 in their last 10. Going back over the Timberwolves and going down to the Warriors at the 8 seed, they are 10-9, one game behind the Timberwolves and 1.5 behind the Suns. I still think they'll figure it out long term, probably won't end up as a play-in team, but for now, this is where they sit. You have the Blazers at 8-10. This is where things start to get ugly in the West. All the way at the 9 seed, you have losing records with the Blazers and also the Grizzlies, who are 6-12, 5 games back of the Suns, 4.5 back of the Wolves. And then the Jazz and the Clippers both at 5-12, a half a game back of the Grizzlies for that play-in spot. Worth noting that the Thunder have the Clippers' first-round pick, so if the Clippers keep playing like this, the Thunder might end up with a top-10 pick this year, which is kind of a problem for the rest of the league. But Clippers should probably figure out how to get anybody but James Harden going. He has been back to his vintage self, and no one else on the roster has done anything. Then you have the Kings at 5-13. They have won 2 in a row after starting a really bad 3-13, but got bad injury news. Domantas Sabonis is going to be out for a little bit as well. The Mavs at 5-14, also a very banged up team, very injured. And then finally at the bottom of the standings, the 3-15 Pelicans, who of course last week in the middle of the podcast fired Willie Green, so they are having to move on with an interim coach for the rest of the season and then a new head coach at the end of the season.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NBA for this week. Let's now turn our attention to college basketball action.
Well, I'm glad at this time that we have started this podcast on Tuesdays now, because at least we've cut down on some of the Feast Week action. The second half of the segment is all Feast Week tournament stuff. But starting off, you have number 5 Duke, who beat number 24 Kansas 78-66 in the Champions Classic. A good win for Duke. But of course, Kansas losing Darren Peterson is kind of a big deal for them moving forward. Don't really know what, I mean, obviously severely lowers the ceiling of this team, but don't really know, honestly, at all what to expect without him on the floor for, I think they said, at least 3 games, including all the players era. But number 17, Michigan State, beat number 12, Kentucky, 83-66. Really good win for Michigan State team, who has started off 2-0 against the SEC, so a good, good start to the season for that team as they continue to kind of defy expectations. Obviously, this year they weren't necessarily supposed to be, you know, back to the top 10 level again, but the way it's looking early in the season, it's looking like they might reach that level once again. Then you have number 4 Arizona, who beat number 3 UConn 71-67. Arizona with one of the strongest starts of the season. If you go by the ranking of the teams as of the time they played them, they have beaten 3 top 15 teams, none of those games at home. This one, a true road game, although UConn didn't have Terrace Reed in this game, their starting center, but still a massive win for Arizona to be able to go and get. This is how you build a resume of a 1 seed, because frankly, they are playing a schedule that no one would play, maybe outside of Alabama, but they're winning games in it. This is not like they're struggling against the schedule, and not even like they're doing what you'd expect them to do, which is lose, you know, maybe 1 or 2 games in those top 15 clashes. They are undefeated so far. So a great start to the season for Arizona. See if they can continue that this week. But you have number 11 Alabama, like I mentioned, crazy schedule, playing number 8 Illinois at the United Center, 90-86, though Alabama comes away with the win, even though obviously this game definitely in Illinois territory, but Alabama able to come up with the win, just like they were last year when these two teams faced off. So Alabama off to a great start in the season. Get to them again later. But number 1 Purdue beat Memphis 80-71. This one was kind of a rough one for Braden Smith in terms of scoring, but you know what? Purdue won the game. He'll be happy with that. Talk about why that was important in a second. Because this was in the Baja Mar Championships, where, of course, number 15 Texas Tech, as we talked about in weekend predictions, beat Wake Forest 84-83, really close game. Wake Forest really lost this game by 4, but they did hit a 3 at the buzzer to cut it to 1. And it was really interesting because they ran the exact same play the next day and used it to beat Memphis when they were down by 2 at the buzzer and needed a last-second shot. So Wake Forest with one of the more entertaining wins of the season so far. But not going to mention that one too extensively. But
that matchup that Texas Tech won did set up a matchup between number one Purdue and number 15 Texas Tech, where Purdue just demolished the Red Raiders 86-56. Just never a chance for Texas Tech to win this game. It was close at the beginning. I think it was about 23-20. And then Purdue just went on a massive, massive run and never really looked back from there. So Purdue easily sealing the victory against number 15 Texas Tech. A good one to put on their resume, a 30-point win against a top 25 team. Although, obviously, it's still early, so you never know what could happen by the end of the season where Texas Tech ends up. But I'm pretty convinced they're a solid team, probably at least. I mean, they're at least a top 25 team. I know I have been lower on them than the national consensus, but I still think they're a top 25 team. So a shocking loss for Texas Tech in terms of the margin, and a great win for Purdue in terms of building up their resume. Moving on, number 6, Louisville beat Cincinnati. Talked about that one in predictions a little bit. Number 9, BYU beat number 23, Wisconsin, 98-70. Again, two expected results, but still good ones for those teams to put on the board. Louisville getting an important neutral court road win, and BYU getting a neutral court road win. That's not possible, but neutral court that's basically in a road area win, and then also BYU doing the same, although more of a home environment for them, of course, playing in Salt Lake City. But a good win nonetheless. And then moving on to kind of feast week action, Clemson beat Georgia 97-94 in overtime. That meant they won the Charleston Classic Palmetto bracket. And then Utah State beat Davidson 94-60 to win the Charleston Classic Lowcountry bracket. I have no idea how they name those brackets, but kind of like the bracket names. Both of those teams playing pretty well in that tournament. Of course, only a 2-game tournament. Just 4 teams in each of the brackets, which is interesting because if Utah State had played Clemson, I think that would have been a really fun matchup to watch. So I know a lot of people saying, why'd they split up the bracket? And me, and I'm saying the same thing. I would have loved to have seen that matchup. And, you know, maybe that's something they'll make the change for next year. But really feels like both of those teams playing really good basketball, though. Clemson just shaking off an early season loss to Georgetown, while Utah State, on the other hand, is just undefeated. They played really well to start the season, a team that I have in my personal top 25, just at the bottom of it. And then the Players' Era tournament started, which means that there are a ton of games to talk about. Also, Maui Invitational. We'll get to those at the end. But starting with the Players' Era, number 3, Houston beats Syracuse 78-74 in overtime. Houston shouldn't have had this game as close as it was, but it did happen like that. Syracuse was down 11. They went on an 11-0 run to send this game to overtime. Then Houston, of course, pulled away in overtime. But still, Houston could have won this game pretty easily in regulation. Decided to make things a little bit more stressful than they already were by letting this game get to overtime and, you know, failing to secure that victory easily. But if you want to talk about easy victories, number 7, Michigan destroyed San Diego State 94-54. First game of the Players' Era for Michigan was a very, very good one. You know, we saw this team last year. I think the story of the season was coming up with wins, but not by big margins, and then occasionally playing too close and kind of having an Icarus moment and flying too close to the sun, and then in the end losing those games, like against Arkansas and against Wake Forest on neutral courts last year. But this year, you know, started in the same way. Wake Forest went to overtime. TCU was a 4-point game, but maybe Michigan has flipped a switch and maybe they figured it out. They figured out how to win and win by margin, which is something that really you do have to do at the top of the game. Of course, you want a 4 or 5 seed. You can do that by winning games and just, you know, scraping by. But if you want to get to that 1 or that 2 seed level, you occasionally have to just bury the hammer on another team. I mean, you just have to hammer down on another team and really, really just blow them out of the water. I mean, you have to win games by big, big margins, not necessarily against teams as good as San Diego State, but, you know, against kind of the middle of the pack teams in your conference, maybe towards the bottom of the conference. And then maybe, you know, in games like this, probably win by like 10 or 15 points. So 40 is ridiculous, but nonetheless, Michigan looking dominant to start it. But the tournament doesn't end there. Of course, Michigan playing at number 21 Auburn later today. Auburn, of course, notably beat Michigan in the Sweet 16 last year. Very, very different looks for both teams this year. New coach for Auburn, new roster with everybody except for Tahad Pettiford leaving. Michigan, a little bit more stability. Obviously, LJ Cason and Amari Burnett Roddy Gale still returning, but a lot of different faces as well, with Yaxel Lindeborg, Adai Mara, Elliot Cadeau, to name a few more, as Johnson as well. But it's an interesting matchup. Auburn beat Oregon yesterday, 84-73, to start off their players' era run. So technically, these are the teams that, if you went by the current standings, they're the number one and number three teams in this tournament currently. Obviously, by ranking, that is not the case. But by the standings, that is how it is now. We will see what happens in this game. It's a really, really interesting matchup between two really good teams. So it's really feeling like an early season version of March, as Feast Week always does. But moving on from that Michigan-Auburn talk, you also have number 12 Gonzaga, who beat number 8 Alabama 95-85 in the players' era. That felt like probably an Elite Eight game that I was watching yesterday, maybe a Sweet 16 game. At worst, honestly, a Sweet 16 game. Definitely felt like two teams that could be national title contenders by the end of the year. I think we've seen that with Alabama, the way that they played against a team like Purdue, against a team like Illinois, against St. John's. We've seen them against top-level competition. Yes, they've lost a few games, but they've only lost two of them. They're 2-2 in four games that probably are all going to be high quad, probably quad 1A games by the end of the season, probably will stay there. So really, really good schedule, as we've talked about with Alabama. They played anybody and everybody who was willing to play them. But they have a little bit of an easier matchup today. They'll take on UNLV, so that should be a pretty easy win. But a good break, because they have only played top 15 teams since their beginning of the season against North Dakota. So nice to take a little break, play a team that maybe isn't as competitive, although that means that they should watch out. They need to keep the same level of play to beat UNLV, just realizing that, you know, probably won't take quite the same level, but it would be nice to, you know, get a big win in this game against a team that's solid, but not on Alabama's level at all, and not on the level of any of their recent opponents either. But moving on from Alabama, you have number 15 Iowa State, who beat the aforementioned St. John's Red Storm. 83-82, Iowa State securing this victory. A really, really fun back and forth game. Two defensive teams that push this games, or that push this game, excuse me, into the 80s, which is pretty interesting. Not exactly what you expect from those two teams, as I said. Two very defense-heavy teams, but sometimes you got to flip the script a little bit, and that is what they did, certainly, in this game. But Iowa State, the one who walks away with the victory. Then you have number 17, Tennessee, who beat Rutgers 85-60 in their first game. A great, great game by Tennessee. Just, you know, Rutgers is not a good team, but Tennessee coming out, first game against really a good opponent all year long, and they take care of business, and we'll see what happens with them moving forward in this tournament. I believe they play Houston at some point. That is actually today. So that will be a very, very interesting litmus test for both teams, really, honestly. Not just Tennessee, but definitely Houston as well. Although Houston, a little more battle-tested early on in the season. But continuing with the final game I'll talk about in the players' era, Baylor beat Creighton 81-74. I'm starting to be very convinced of this Baylor team. Maybe should have gotten some top 25 love themselves before the season. And at this point, if they continue playing like this, it'll happen sooner rather than later. They, of course, also play later today in the players' era. So if they can get another win today, this time against St. John's, first of all, that would be a big upset. But if they could get it, they would definitely end the week in the top 25. But Baylor, nonetheless, playing good basketball, definitely a tournament team the way they've looked so far to open the season. And then in Maui, you have, of course, one of the weaker Maui Invitational fields we've seen in a while, but still a fun tournament nonetheless. Still have a lot of tournament hopefuls here, including USC and Boise State, who played yesterday. USC beat Boise State 70-67, a good win for the Trojans as they stay undefeated on the season and claim what probably will be their first Quad 1 win out of who they've played so far. There's also a chance Boise State isn't in the top 50 of the net, but they're going to be pretty close to it, I would imagine, by the end of the season, so we'll see if it's quad one or a really high quad two game, but for now, a good win for USC, and they'll be happy about that nonetheless. Then you have Arizona State, who beat Texas 87-86. Mo Odom had 36 points in this game. It was an absolutely electric matchup to end the night in Maui that Arizona State escaped with the win and Mo Odom with a big three at the end of the game to win it. For the Sun Devils, who have only lost one game this year to Gonzaga, so maybe they're a little bit better than people expected. And then finally, actually ending with what the first game of the game of the day was. Seton Hall beat number 23 NC State 85-74. So the Pirates undefeated. Meanwhile, the only ranked team in Maui has now been capped at fifth place at best if they were to win out in this tournament, which is shocking. Frankly, I think NC State was expected to kind of come out, not dominate this field, but, you know, win a few games by somewhere between, I don't know, 5 and 10 points and, you know, maybe not cruise, but get a championship here. I think if you're looking at preseason expectations, they're not head and shoulders above the rest, but they should be a tier or two above USC and Boise State, and then another tier above teams like Texas and even Arizona State to that extent. But here they are losing to arguably probably the sixth best team in the tournament heading into things. So NC State not off to a great start in that tournament, but we'll see if they can figure it out long term. Obviously, a very, very new team with a new coach. So makes sense that they might struggle a little bit. But they definitely need to bounce back here at the end of this tournament.
All right, well, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, December 2nd, where we will once again talk about Patrick's weekend predictions, review week 14 of college football, and if we have time, potentially preview conference championship game weekend, look back at week 13 in the NFL, and have our weekly review of NBA and college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and his college hoops bracketology. That content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24. Thank you for listening.